Today, the On Deadline podcast is coming to you from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We've got KCBS radio political reporter Doug Sovereign on the ground there, and he's joining KNX's Mike Simpson to fill us in on everything we need to know.
All right, Mike Simpson with Doug Sovereign, who's in Milwaukee at the convention right there in the arena now for day one. Doug, look, I don't have to tell you, but what happened over the weekend was one of those moments where you're always going to remember where you were. But then the thing is, the news didn't stop. It kept coming. We've even got a couple breaking stories today. The huge court case against a former president, one of them dismissed. So I was thinking, where do we start with this? And first, it was going to be all the stepped up security for obvious reasons. And we'll get to that. But now, when you talk to people who have come in for this, do they almost feel now like their guy is unstoppable because he's beat back any resistance in his party? He's beat court cases. And now, literally, he's survived an assassination attempt.
Not just unstoppable, but invincible. I mean, they see him as a hero. He's going to be get a hero's welcome, kind of a conquering hero. And yeah, they're saying literally nothing can stop this guy. Not courts, not judges, not the threat of prison, not a bullet. And that's kind of the aura he's going to bring to this show. And it will be a show for 4 days. And, you know, the news of Judge Cannon's decision obviously was greeted with tremendous acclaim here. These delegates are thrilled to hear this. But a lot of them sort of never believed in that case anyway, or any of the cases against Trump, and they dismiss them all. They buy into his line that it's all a witch hunt and a political setup. So they're like, up, there goes another one. That one's out. And they're confident that, you know, the New York one may get tossed out because of the immunity and the use of evidence that could be tainted. And they think this could now taint the January 6th case. I mean, they're confident these things are all going to go away or be delayed, and he's going to become president anyway, and then he'll shut down the Justice Department prosecution of these cases. So yeah, they're feeling confident not only in that, but just in his ability to bring the country together and to win this election.
Does celebratory even cut it as a word? Because there was the period over the weekend where it was kind of like, whoa, I mean, what is this actually going to look like after somebody took a shot at him?
Yeah, and you had to wonder, I mean, it was a terrifying thing, obviously, and tremendous shock for everybody. And imagine if that bullet had been an inch or two over, would this convention even be happening? And what form would it be taking? So there was, you know, people were on airplanes and getting off and hearing about it, and they were shocked. Then they were relieved, obviously, that he was not killed. Then they were sad when they heard about, yeah, wait a second, there are deaths involved here. This is really serious. And now, though, they're kind of already shifting back into regular convention mode with the added element of we're going to bring everyone together, and there's going to be a theme of unity, and let's tone down the rhetoric. And again, we don't know if that's really going to hold true, but at least for now, the message they're getting is let's tone it down, let's be respectful. And that is kind of the vibe I'm getting from delegates so far. And they're just now filing in for the first day of this convention, the actual session. They're feeling very positive and enthusiastic. But yeah, there is that let's all come together and focus on policy and serious stuff, and not, you know, the kind of showmanship and craziness we've seen in these campaigns the last couple of years. And again, we will see if that even lasts as long as this convention does.
Yeah, and I guess his speech is changing too, and I'll ask you about that in a second. But first, back to the security. I mean, they say it's stepped up. Secret Service says we've gone through all of our different plans, and look, this is already one of those super high profile national security events. But walk me through from like hotel into arena. What did you notice? What did you see?
Well, you know, it did tighten up over the last 2 days, but it's hard to tell if that was normal or intensified. And, you know, we've gotten mixed messages. The head of the Secret Service said, no, we're not changing the plan. Then the head of the Secret Service here said, yes, we are changing the plan. It's always a little more lax in the day or two before the convention formally starts, this being Monday. So I got here Saturday. They tightened things down very quickly Sunday, which they don't normally do. So that was seemed abnormal, that it was tighter before the actual convention begins. As far as whether today was any tighter than it was supposed to be, I can't really tell because I have nothing to compare it to as far as this convention. Certainly some of the entry points were closed. And yeah, my hotel is a 12-minute walk away in downtown Milwaukee. Former President Trump is staying two blocks away from me, so his motorcade has gone by, and there's a lot of security just all around our hotel because he's so close. And Milwaukee, I don't know how many people have ever been here, but it's a beautiful city with a river down through the middle. Milwaukee River, there's a river walk. You know, it's not Venice or anything, but it's lovely. And I grew up about half an hour from here, so I know it pretty well. You know, for me, it's a 12-minute walk across a bridge, up the river, and then I'd come up Martin Luther King Jr. Way, and then I'd come up to Fiserv Forum, where the Bucks play and where this convention is. But now a lot of that is shut down. There's huge gates. You've got to take, you know, detours and go around. And today it was not as easy to get in as yesterday. We had to, the ways I've been going before are now closed, and there are multiple credential checks. And then you get to those gates, and then you've got to wait about a half an hour in a line to go through the magnetometers and all of that. And there's layers of credentials. I mean, I have, four different credentials around my neck to get in the perimeter.
You've got to find the right badge to show somebody.
To where my radio position is, to get on the floor of the arena. And, you know, not everyone can go every single place. So it is extremely tight, but it doesn't feel any different or tighter than all the other. I've been doing these conventions since 2004, Republican and Democrat, and it doesn't feel any different from any in the past. And I'm not sure how much more security they could really put in place. I mean, despite the assassination attempt, it's already, as you say, as high security an event as they have. So you could bring in extra personnel to reinforce the law enforcement. I guess you could have more helicopters up. There are Coast Guard gunboats on the river, but I think all of that would have been there in the first place.
You mentioned the word unity, and it is going around. Donald Trump telling the New York Post, he threw out his old speech, said in his words, first one was pretty nasty, this one more on bringing people together. But to your point, I guess we're going to see what form that takes, and then if the other speakers all through this week are going to kind of take a cue from that.
Yeah, well, obviously he has to set the tone, but he doesn't give his formal speech till Thursday. So unless he comes out today after he's nominated to say a few words, which sometimes people do, and back in 2016 he came out and talked a little bit on the opening day and sort of surprised everybody. So I would not be surprised if he wants to come out on this stage and show these delegates, here I am, I'm healthy, I'm fine. You know, give him the fist bump, which is now going to be his signature, not the fist bump, the fist thrust in the air. You're going to be seeing that a lot. It's going to be like a Trump power salute, I think. I wouldn't be surprised if he says something. Maybe that's how he'll introduce his running mate. We'll see. But I assume the message has gone out to these other speakers, and usually someone vets people's speeches. You know, take out the stuff attacking Biden and the Democrats, at least some of it, and let's talk about unity and bringing people together. You know, as you said, he admits his initial draft was nasty. Sure, they were going to blame Joe Biden and the Democratic Party for everything under the sun. They may still do some of that, but I think if he's sending the message, everybody tone it down, probably most of the speakers will try to conform to that.
You mentioned the VP, so you took us right there. There is something else big happening today, and he has confirmed that person's going to be named, and the shortlist was kind of down to three already, right? Remind us who they are.
Yeah, and by the time people listen to this, perhaps we will know that name, because they're going to nominate Trump for president and his vice presidential running mate in the next couple of hours. So you may know this already by the time you listen to this podcast. But the three who we've heard the most about are North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, and, of course, Marco Rubio, Senator from Florida. Tim Scott from South Carolina, Senator, has also been thrown in the mix. We don't think there are any women anymore on the short list. I mean, Nikki Haley is going to come speak here, but it's hard to believe he would... I mean, that would really be going on the unity, out on the unity limb if he picks her as his running mate. I don't expect that. We think it's one of those three or four. I spoke with Burgum yesterday. He wasn't, if he knew anything, he wasn't sharing it. He didn't seem to know. My money has been on J.D. Vance, but he's done a couple things lately that maybe he's shifting back to Burgum. We'll see. Burgum's probably the safest pick for Trump because he doesn't do any damage. He brings no negatives, really. He's been a successful governor. He's another white male billionaire. He's not someone who's going to undermine or overshadow Trump and be running in 2028 from the get-go. I think Trump would like that. He'd be a loyal partner. Marco Rubio, it's hard to see that working because he's from Florida and Trump's residency is now Florida, and there are ways around that. You know, the Constitution says they can't both be from the same state, or they can be, but they would forfeit the electors from that state. In an election this close, you can't run that risk. So either Trump would have to change his residency again, which I would not expect him to want to do, or Rubio would, and that would mean resigning from the Senate and moving to another state. That just seems logistically too complex. They pulled that off with Bush and Cheney back in 2000 because Cheney, of course, was from Wyoming but had moved to Houston to work for Halliburton, and he changed his residency back to Wyoming. But he had a prior residence, and Rubio doesn't. So there goes the house band beginning the first song of this whole week. So I still think it's going to be Burgum or Vance, but we'll see.
This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strauser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and thanks for listening to this special GOP convention episode of Odyssey's The On Deadline podcast, where we bring you a closer look at top news stories. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.